just quick things. We just finished with the
All right. Yeah. How do you pronounce your last name, Ms. Look?
We pronounce it Look.
Look, and how do you spell that?
L-U-K.
Okay.
I didn't look at the email with the scheduled interviews on it, but that's okay.
Thanks.
So, thank you for taking the time to talk to us. My name's Chris Seifer. That's Al Craigle. That's Claire Murray. Mm-hmm. We're all with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. I suspect these folks have already told you this, but we told it to everybody to start. We are charged by the statute that was passed last year to figure out the causes of the financial crisis. We're also charged with looking at every financial institution that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of government assistance, which is why we're looking at AIG. And we're also told by the statute to look at the regulation of those institutions, which is why we're looking at the OTS, which is why we wanted to talk to you, since some of your colleagues identified you as being involved in the regulation of AIG. So what I, and that's primarily what I want to talk to you about, but as I've asked everybody, can you first just give me your college educational background and then your work history forward so I have some context of who you are and what your background is?
Sure. I went to college at Pomona College in Claremont, California. I got a bachelor's degree in philosophy, and I could give you a date, and I'd be dating myself, but that was in 81. After that, I got an MBA from the Claremont Graduate School. I think they've now changed the name to Claremont Graduate University or something like that, but it's part of the Claremont Colleges. And I have an MBA from there. After that, in 1987, I got a job as a trainee with the FDIC. I started off with the FDIC in their Philadelphia office. It was the Valley Forge Field office, part of their New York region. After 3.5, maybe 4 years, I went through their commissioning process and I was commissioned as an FDIC examiner. I worked with the FDIC for approximately 5 years. Then I went to the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, where I was an examiner in their International Examinations Unit. I was a senior examiner with the Federal Reserve, and then after a couple of years, I was promoted to supervising examiner, and I was there for approximately 6 years in the International Department there. Then I left the Federal Reserve and worked on my family business for personal reasons. Starting in 2005, I started with the OTS as a program manager in the complex and international organizations. Yeah, CIO, complex and international organizations. And I've been here since. There's been some restructuring internally within OTS, where the complex and international was a regional function. Then it came here to Washington as a unit here with the operations out of D.C. And then approximately 2 years ago, the operational piece went back out into the region. Was that what you were?
Yes, that's exactly what I was looking for. So when the CIO was originally regional, when you got here in 2005, it was regional, and then it comes to D.C. in ballpark?
Probably like in 06, it was formally transferred to D.C., and then in 08...
After CK went to Dallas.
Yeah. When CK went to Dallas, it went, and I think CK went to Dallas in 08, it went back to the regions.
Okay. And since you've been here at the OTS, have you always been a program manager?
Yes.
Okay. What is a program manager?
Well, I'll just answer it by giving you what my job was at the beginning.
Sure.
which was to provide policy and operational oversight over the complex and international holding companies. In terms of policy, it was to develop and provide support for, once again, the complex and international cases, or in some terms, sometimes you'll call them conglomerates. On the operational side, I guess because I had experience with other agencies and also with international banking organizations, I just provided oversight and guidance to the examination teams.
Okay, so my understanding is, what's it called? The financial
conglomerates directive.
Conglomerates directive comes down in
the 03-04 period. I forget, the dates escape me.
But that had occurred by the time you get here, I take it, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
When I got here, they were already in the process of getting equivalency status for OTS. And while I was here, I believe AIG received equivalency status at the end of 2005. There was a press release on the OTS website, which...
Yeah, we got it from... It's dated February 07. OTS receives EU equivalency designation for supervision of AIG.
Oh, it took us that long? Okay.
But you signed
sorry.
The information sharing agreement with the French supervisor, the Banking Commission. That was executed in 2005,
okay.
I believe, April of 05. So that was the precursor to them, right? You had to have this first.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
That's
and
right. It did take us a long time with them.
And can you just, I know very little about how this whole thing works and what had to be done. Just explain to me what this, the financial conglomerate directive and then getting certified or whatever it's called. What does that mean?
Back in approximately the beginning of 2000, and the exact date escapes me, but it was maybe 2001, the European Union decided that they needed to have, under their legislation, what they wanted to, was to have an overall supervisor that would take responsibility for the oversight of companies operating in the European Union so that you would not have one country looking after... They wanted one country to sort of coordinate everything in Europe. And so for the U.S. companies... They did not want a European government to be their coordinator for their European businesses. They wanted a U.S. agency to coordinate the supervision of their European companies. And so under OTS, because AIG had a thrift, it was technically a savings and loan holding company. We were the holding company supervisor. We were the logical choice for them to propose us as their consolidated supervisor for European Union FCD purposes. What that entailed was a technical exercise with... In AIG's case, it was France, and to be really technical, at the time, it was the Commission Bancaire, which was part of the Bank of France, and ACAM, which I can't give you other than the
acronym.
It's acronym. It's French. We can get it for you. But that was the insurance side. And what they wanted was to what they wanted in the equivalency purposes was to determine that essentially all of our regulations and our supervisory regime was equivalent to a standard that was set by the European Union. So we went through this whole exercise of sharing with them, you know, from it was very comprehensive, from both starting off with applications to enforcement to our examination regime, everything that OTS did as an agency. And so after quite a long time, they deemed us to be an equivalent supervisor. And then, so then OTS was then deemed the, for European Union, the equivalent supervisor for AIG consolidated purposes.
Okay. So in terms of when you said that it made sense, or words to that effect, that the OTS was a logical choice for AIG to choose to be its consolidated supervisor, did AIG do that before your time here?
Yes.
Okay. So that process is in place and going forward when you show up in 2005, right? But
yes.
The info sharing agreement, that's April of 05. I don't know if you've done it yet. But certainly the certification hasn't come down until February 7. What should I be doing?
Just a little, there we go.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Well, I should clarify that AIG, saying logical choice maybe is not the best choice of words, in the sense that OTS is the top-tier supervisor, so that if you were to try to do this with the European Union as the top-tier supervisor, we would be the ones that would you know, be nominated.
Well, for example, we know that the SEC was the supervisory for the then five investment banks. Do you know whether or not AIG ever looked at them as being the CSE?
I have no idea.
Okay. Okay. And again, were you involved at all in this process of getting, I don't know, if certified or approval, whatever the right word is?
Equivalency.
Yeah. And if so, what was it?
No, I was not part of that process.
Okay. So then let's just jump right to AIG. Just generally describe for us your involvement with the regulation of AIG. And then I'll ask you follow-up questions.
I was not involved with AIG until Brad Waring left to become assistant director in the Southeast region. He did an interim detail as the deputy director of the Midwest region, and when he did his detail, that was when they asked me to come on and take his spot as director of conglomerate operations. So I did the detail then, and that is formally when I started on the AIG case. Prior to that, AIG was not in my portfolio, and I did other holding companies, but not AIG.
So when Waring leaves and you become the director of conglomerate operations, when is that? Ballpark.
February or March, maybe?
Of?
Well, when did CK leave?
08.
So it would be 08.
Oh, okay, so that late. All right. Okay.
And then when CK, so when Brad left, I became the acting director of conglomerate operations. And then when CK left, I became acting managing director of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And I take it you were in that position until they transferred it back to the regions at the end of 08?
Yes.
Okay.
3 months. My detail as acting managing director lasted 3 months.
Okay.
And then I did another detail I'm sorry that this is not real logical, but sort of, when that detail was over, then I did another detail as I don't know if you remember officially having one, but it was kind of like the director of operations, but for the Northeast region, to make sure that the transition and putting the caseload back to the I was in charge of like transitioning it back to the region.
Okay, so when you come in February, March 2008 time frame as the acting director and then the acting managing director, what are you doing? What are the issues with AIG?
At the time, we were heading towards rolling up the final exam for 2007. I believe it was sometime in March when the material concern was surfaced, and the examination team talked about that and forwarded me information on how the they were going to have this, you know, material concern. That was when we started discussion with the team and with CK about downgrading AIG's rating.
And when you say in March of 08, the material concern services, what were the material concerns?
It was relating back to what the external auditor was going to find and had noted. And it had generally to do with their risk management with FP and finding that there were substantial weaknesses. It was very much in line with what we had looked at and discussed in prior years. And it was this whole enterprise risk management and their ability to look at their risk profile across the entire company was always something that we were concerned about. When the external auditor noted this material weakness, that further supported further supported and elevated our concern.
Now, when you talk about the PwC noticing it, I'm aware of the February 11, 2008 8K, in which they say PwC has noted material weaknesses in the processes evaluating CDS. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
I haven't looked at it recently. It may also talk about a broader ERP-type problem, enterprise risk management-type problem. But I want to ask you if we're talking about something more or different than just the valuation of the CDS portfolio?
That's probably the primary focus, was the CDS portfolio.
Okay. And then you mentioned that the auditor making this material weakness finding was consistent with what the OTS had looked at and discussed in prior years. Now, I take it since you were just coming into this in February, March of 08, how do you know that was consistent with what the OTS was looking at and discussing in prior years?
Because part of what Complex and International had as our policy regime was that for every report of exam that came in, this is the year-end roll-up exams, so that would be an it would be for the 07 and then the 06, I think, is what we did it for. We would have a panel, we would call it a peer panel, comprising of office staff and of examiners, and we would read a draft of the report of exam for AIG, and we would discuss what the examiners noted in there as concerns, what they discussed. We would challenge their findings. We would discuss the analysis. We would analyze the rating to make sure that it was consistent with OTS guidance. We would discuss the rating so that it was consistent with, you know, how it was supported by the exam. And essentially, it was a kind of a analytical challenge process to make sure that, you know, things were consistent and supported.
Okay.
So that's why I knew, because I was on those panels.
Okay. Who else was on those, and was it called the peer panel? I mean, it had
peer panel.
Okay. And who else was on the peer panel besides yourself and presumably the EICs from doing CIO exams?
Well, it would be from the other examinations, so that the EICs of the other examinations, so that at the time it would be from two other reviews, that would be Manny Tissaverasinghe, and then from another conglomerate, Rod Doctor, Kevin Jesser. We would have Washington staff, Donna Deal, Linda Duzik, C.K. Brett, myself. Then we would have the AIG program manager, which was kind of a rotating thing after Paul B. Arneson, who I think in 05, he started in 05. A little bit after, he came on a little bit after me, so he was the AIG program manager. So he was there.
I take it Tom Overwick was probably on this, right? Wasn't he the EIC for AIG?
Oh, yes. Yeah. For AIG, you would have the examiner in charge. Right. And anybody else that he would, you know, deemed as his kind of like a second person, so that would be Jim Krishner.
Okay. And then we've heard from other folks that Paul Bjornson, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name, was replaced by a guy named Kevin Anderson, or vice versa. Was Kevin Anderson part of this panel when he replaced Bjornson?
I don't remember when Kevin came on, whether he did an exam or not, and whether he was part of the panel. I can't remember.
So were the peer, describe for me the peer panel process. Is it, I feel like in this conference room, all sitting around the table going over the draft exam report and the draft ratings for the institution and just back and forth on it?
What would happen was that from a couple days to a week before we had the meeting scheduled, the examination team would provide everybody with a draft report and the proposed rating. Then everybody would gather in the room, and we would go through each of the core components, discussing the merits of the rating, whether we felt it was adequately supported or not, whether there were any concerns, whether this was consistent with what we were doing with other large and complex cases. And essentially what we do is we just go through in good detail the whole each chapter, C-O-R-E, and then the composite rating.
Mm-hmm. Was any of this documented?
No.
So there was no memo or minutes or anything like that of the peer review meetings?
No. We did not have minutes. I think what we did was we would just provide verbal comments to the EIC, so that would be to Tom and then to Jim. And they would just write down what we had as in the columns, what comments, whatever comments people had.
Okay. In terms of, then I'll just have to ask you for your best recollection for these peer panel meetings. In terms of, and all I'm interested in right now for is AIG. And like when you come in 2005, are you involved in the peer panel meeting for AIG in 2005, or is that?
No, there was no peer panel meeting in 2005. The first peer panel meeting started in 2006.
Okay, so there's one in 2006, there's one in 2007. Is there one in 2008, given everything that happened?
I don't remember one happening in 2008.
Okay.
Mostly because I don't think we issued a report in 2007.
In 2007 or 2008? I think you issued a report in 2007.
But that would be 2006.
You issued a report in 2007. The June 2007.
Maybe we're just talking past each other. But the peer
dates,
panel reviews...
The dates can be very confusing.
So, according to...
the June 2007 examination...
Yes.
...was the examination for the regular holding company where the new rating system was applied, where AIG was assigned a composite rating of 2...
Right.
...and a component rating of 2 for risk management. Both the composite and the risk management component ratings are fundamentally sound.
Right.
Okay. So that's the... 06 or 07 exam?
June of 2007.
Okay. Now, the June 07 exam is the 07 exam, or is that the 06 exam? I used to be at the OTS, and I remember these date things sometimes would get a little squirrely because there was lags in doing the work and then issuing the exam report. But is the June 07 exam report for the 2007 exam?
We call it the June... We would call it the 07 exam because it was technically finished and mailed in 2007.
Okay.
But technically, it covers the
an earlier time period.
The 2006 time period.
Right. And maybe up to like 1Q07 or something, right?
We would update it
right.
If there was anything material.
Okay. So there was a peer panel review in 06... And 07, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. And then after that, for AIG, for example, Mr. O'Rourke and Mr. Christner will take everybody's comments, make whatever changes they make, and submit the report for final signing and mailing to the company. Yes? What happens next?
No.
What happens next after the peer panel?
No, the control processes wouldn't allow them, would include additional approval layers. After the peer panel, they would go back and they would redraft the report and revise comments. Then it would come back to the program manager. I have to tell you that I'm speaking theoretically here because at the time I was not the AIG program manager, so that I don't know, mm-hmm.
This is what happened in your caseload.
This has happened in my caseload.
Okay.
All of the comments, the program manager would then re-review all of the edits. Then once the program manager reviewed the edits, the Waring, as director of operations, would review all of the edits. And then once he reviewed all of the edits, the report then would go to CK, who would read the report. And if he felt that report was okay, then I believe it was CK and the examiner in charge would sign it.
So it didn't have to go up to Albinson or Ward or Polakoff or Rich for approval, as far
not
as
that I'm aware.
Okay.
What do you recall about the peer review of the AIG report in 07? I mean, we know what Al just told us. Was there a discussion about whether or not that was that result of something that was different than the original review? Tell me what you recall, if anything.
I don't remember anything extraordinary about that discussion. I know that we spent a long time analyzing and challenging the ratings. But other than what we would normally discuss, I don't remember anything extraordinary. Once again, the whole peer panel process is a debating exercise. It's designed to challenge the results, whether hypothetically it classically fits this definition. As part of the challenge process, you would ask questions as to, well, why wasn't it one rating higher, why wasn't it one rating lower, and so that's just part of what we were supposed to do.
Okay. And Al, what is the later date on the 07 report? June, did you say?
June of 07.
Okay. Is the ending date on the report, what does that signify? The last day of the field work or the day it's transmitted? Do you recall?
No, that's the date that the report was closed out within our system so that it no longer becomes a Word document, but it becomes a official record PDF file. The report of exam, that's it.
Okay.
It's finalized, it's printed out, and it's, back then it was a physical copy was still being sent to the company.
Okay, so that's probably shortly after Mr. Lee signs off on it. Okay.
I think the whole conglomerate, the CIO program also, we had the continuous supervision piece in that we had these teams like with Tom, Manny, and Jim. They were the full-time examination team in these companies at AIG. And so what we tried to do with the report of exam, for example, the one that was mailed in 07, would have covered all of their activities from the beginning of January of 06 to the end of 06. And that was what we would call the examination cycle. So the 07 report technically covers the 06 cycle.
And like you said, you've got folks like Jim and Manny and others that are on site at AIG throughout the year, correct?
Yes. What we would have is an EIC that was designated for a 2-year period with an assistant EIC before that. He would have an assistant EIC so that Tom was the EIC, and then Manny Tsivarasinghe was kind of his assistant EIC. Tom would do, this in theory, how it was supposed to work was that Tom would be there for 2 years as EIC, and then after his 2-year period, he would then rotate off the case. And then Manny, who'd been there, you know, under his tutelage for 2 years, would then step into the primary role for 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Others have explained it that way, too. So I don't think it was like that when I was at the OTS. Then again, the CAO didn't exist when I was at the OTS. Okay. So other than being involved in the peer panel in 07, before it becomes part of your caseload when Lee and Waring leave in early 08, was that your only involvement with AIG up till you become the
yes.
program? Okay. So between the peer panel in the June 07 time frame, I take it, and when you become program manager, obviously a lot is happening at AIG in this 8-9 month period or whatever it is. I mean, are you not? Do you know about what's going on at AIG, or do you find out about it when CK Lee and Waring leave and you come in?
From a very high level view, I would know a little bit about what was going on at AIG because CIO had quarterly staff meetings, and what we would do is all of the CIO cases would come to Washington. I mean, we would convene here in Washington, and we would spend a day talking about each of the caseloads. So the EIC and the program manager would have one time slot and just sort of brief all of CIO, CK, and Waring what they were doing, what they had, you know, what they were doing that quarter, what they found in their quarterly reviews, what their concerns were.
And were these quarterly staff meetings always at the same time in the quarter? I mean, were they always March 31st, June 30th?
No.
Okay. Were before the staff meetings, would you receive some kind of briefing package, or was it just they'd tell you when they'd come in?
They would just. It was just a kind of a verbal update. We did not have a briefing package.
Okay. Any documentation of these meetings?
No.
I take it when you said no to my questions about documentation on peer panel on these, I suspect there may be emails, people talking about them. Hey, we talked about this at the peer panel meeting, or this about the quarterly meetings, and hey, I've made the revisions to the exam report, and things like that.
Yes.
Okay. But no formal documentation like minutes or memos of we had this meeting and the following was discussed and da-da-da-da-da.
We did not have a formal documentation or formal minutes of what happened during the peer panel or during the quarterly meetings. There would be, yeah, just as a normal part of discussion and course of business, there would be discussions of, you know, what may have happened during the meetings or during the peer panel. What happened during the peer panel was that everybody approached it differently. And what I did was I would just print out the report. I would just physically write down notes on what I wanted to discuss. This paragraph is no good, you know, what do you mean here, that kind of thing. And then it would also include little, you know, technical things like misspellings and all of that. And then at the end of the panel, I would just hand Tom or Russo or to, no, it's not, it's Mike Russo. Is it Mike Russo? Yeah.
Yes.
Mike or Tom, just the report.
Okay. So Tom meaning Tom O'Rourke.
Yeah.
Right. And Mike Russo, or would it be Jim Christman?
See, there was one panel in there in which I think Mike was more involved because Tom was deployed and wasn't here.
Okay.
And He's done a couple tours, and this is why I'm not, like...
I think he's doing one now?
Yes. That's why, you know, that was... That report was he, you know, that...
Right.
I'd have to go and look at my calendar to be completely exact as to, you know, which one that was and all that.
Okay. So, I mean, this may be a better question for you, Chris, than Alex. Are the marked-up reports preserved, or do they just get thrown in the shredder when it's all said and done? Okay. So what do you recall, if anything, whether it's from the quarterly staff meetings from the time you're in the peer panel in June of 07 and the time you become program manager for AIG, whether it's the quarterly meetings or otherwise, not learning anything about AIG, since we do know that in that time period the collateral calls came in, you've got the December 5th conference call, you've got the February 11th 8K, et cetera, et cetera. If anything, you know, the guy's coming in and saying, you got problems.
You mean before all of that?
Before you become program manager in the March 2008 time frame, which is my understanding of when Lee and Warren leave.
I don't remember anything extraordinary.
Okay, and I think that's just, I know it's on the tape, but I may not remember it. The same thing for the peer panel in June of 07, right? Nothing out of the ordinary, nothing extraordinary, the usual kind of stuff.
Correct.
Okay. What about, in addition to these exam reports, we've received a lot of targeted review reports. Are the people in your position that are involved in the peer panels, do they get involved in those at all? Or is that just only to the extent they're rolled up in the annual exam as part of the peer panel?
No. The peer panels never covered any of the targeted reports.
Okay.
The results of the targeted reviews were rolled up into the annual report of exams, but we never convened a whole peer panel just to look at a target.
Okay. So one of the things we've noticed is that 2007 exam for the 2006 cycle is like June 23rd, I think. There was a targeted field review that started in April, and I think, and it's the ending date is July, that is looking at some of the issues that blew up later on in the year. Would those findings, and I haven't looked at the regular exam reports when I can look, but would they have been, as a matter of course, just rolled up into those exam reports, or would something that's in process not be part of the exam report and therefore part of the peer panel?
In AIG's case, I don't know whether they did or not, because I wasn't on the case.
Okay, in your experience for your caseload, is that, you know, look, I know we're having the peer panel in June, you guys are wrapping up a 2006 exam, we also have this targeted review going on, make sure that your current findings are in the annual exam. Is that the kind of thing that happened or not?
This would be done on a case-by-case basis, and it would depend on what the preliminary findings of that targeted review were. If they were material, if they were of concern, then that information would be evaluated to see how it would impact the report of examination that was going out.
Okay. So tell me, you come in March of 08 knowing something about AIG from peer panels.
Ouch. Sure.
Okay.
I'm going to go back and vote.
So tell me, you know, what you come in and you find what? What are the issues when you come in?
Well, at the time, when I come in, we're heading towards rolling up everything for the prior year into a report of the exam. Tom tells me that he has this really big and huge concern, and that the auditors were going to come in with this material weakness. And that was when we discussed saying that in order for us to go through the whole process of finishing an exam and everything, I mean, a formal, not when I say finishing the exam, finishing the ROE process, that we can't wait that long, and that we needed to address and convey our supervisory concerns more immediately. So that's when I proposed to CK that we do an interim rating change, an interim downgrade, in a letter to the company documenting what our concerns are. And really to elevate, try to elevate elevate our concerns to the company.
Okay, so you propose it to CK? I thought you were taking over for CK at this time.
No, there was a...
This is when you took over for Waring, but CK...
It was when I took over for Waring. Okay. There was... I think I took over for Waring for a month before CK left.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was in that time frame that, as in Waring's position, this is what I proposed to CK.
Okay. And how was that proposal received by CK?
Oh, CK... wanted us to be completely on top of, and to be responsive to the developments that was happening. And what we did right away was Tom drafted a draft letter, which he sent to me, to the program manager, Kevin Anderson. We discussed the letter here in Washington with our enforcement department as to what kind of technical language that, we needed to have in there. And then once that letter was in pretty reasonable shape, we had a couple meetings, phone calls, to talk about the letter, to talk about the rating downgrade. I discussed with CK going forward what our strategy was going to be, because obviously with the material concern that was, and coming in, which was completely in line with what we had been concerned about before, my proposal was that we needed to elevate our supervisory response for the remainder of the year.
Were there, I believe you said that, Tom, when you took over for Waring, and Tom says he has a big concern about the PwC material weakness finding and doesn't want to wait to finish putting together the ROA and wants to do something quicker and you agree to do that.
No, I said that.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. I know you're coming in March of 08, and I suspect in addition to dealing with this, you're sort of figuring out more about AIG since it's now in your caseload. Did you look back, and do you know whether or not there were concerns or desires to do something even before? I mean, there were things happening shortly after, and maybe even during when this targeted review was being done that ended in July of 07. I don't know the exact timing on the collateral calls, but we do know that they came in, if nothing else, shortly after that. We do know that there was not a market valuation model for the CDS portfolio, I don't think ever, until late 2007. Did you ever find out about those things, and did they raise concerns? Did you hear that folks in an earlier time frame were saying, we need to hit them with a downgrade, or we need to downgrade them in during the peer panel for June of 07 or anything like that.
One of the challenges with AIG was always getting accurate and complete information. And that was always one of the underlying themes in our report of examinations, was that we never, we always said that for AIG, a complex international holding company, they needed to have a world-class enterprise risk management regime. That, I think that theme was quite well discussed in the 07 exam. So that when you go back and you say, oh, well, you know, they didn't have, you know, we know now that they didn't have anything to, a model to look at the valuations, this was always information that we kept trying to get from them. And there were lots of conversations in which Jim Christner and Tom O'Rourke and Brad would say, well, their chief risk officer has sent this to us, that they have this. All right, well, then let's request that information then. No. So I can't speak more specifically prior to when I became involved with the case that this was just generally my impression. I just know that when I became in charge of the case and that then the external auditors came in with this material weakness, then under our rules of engagement of what we can and cannot reflect and how a company is rated and, you know, what buckets they would fall into, I had the analysis, I had the documentation. They fit that definition of that downgrade, and that was when we were able to move.
Mm-hmm. But was it your sense, or even more than your sense, that in the time before you came in, I mean, you said that there was always a challenge getting accurate and complete information from AIG. Mm-hmm. It sounds like it was a challenge to getting information, period, from AIG. Is that the case? And let me give you an example. I mean, you know, one of the things that I'm not a hide the ball guy. I mean, one of the things that jumps out at us from this, and granted, some of this is perfectly 2020 hindsight, but we see that, you know, a material weakness 8K comes out in February 11th, 2008 that says you have a material weakness in your process for valuing CDS. And we know that they didn't have a model for valuing their CDS throughout 07. Mm-hmm. And while we see in exam reports and targeted reviews the things you're talking about, and we see discussion of a VAR model, which is in the market valuation model, which is the stress test, the message to us anyway is that, well, the OTS knows there's not a market valuation model for the super senior CDS portfolio. Now, we've heard from folks, not just from OTS and otherwise, that, oh, well, we were always being told that we'll never take a loss on the super senior CDS portfolio. It's the super senior tranche, right? I mean, and even though they're subprime, there has to be tons of losses before we take a loss. Nevertheless, you know, when you put all of this together and you say the material weakness comes out, and I assume the OTS knew there was no market valuation model throughout that time frame, you know, that raises the question to us of what did the OTS know, and did it raise concerns that there wasn't a valuation model for the CDS, and or was the thinking, hey, you know, they're telling us that they'll never take a loss on it. PwC may be telling us the same thing. We've heard that, but haven't PwC documentation yet, so I don't know if that's true. Is that what was going on? Do you know, or is there something else? I mean,
I don't know whether we knew or not whether they had a market evaluation model or not.
Is that, if AIG would have been in your caseload at the time, is that one of the kind of thing you would have wanted to know?
I don't know. It wasn't in my caseload.
I know. That's why I said if it would have been. I mean, for the companies that were in your caseload, I don't know if they had super senior CDS portfolios, but it's...
No.
Okay.
The companies in my caseload didn't have this particular kind of financial product. Everything... No. I just don't know.
Okay. Other than, I hear you saying that AIG was challenging in getting accurate and complete information, and you don't know about the other things I just asked about. Generally, do you think the OTS had the expertise and experience to be the consolidated regulator for AIG, given their size and given their operations?
I think that there's a lot you can learn from 2020 hindsight, and, you know, if I were to sort of mentally do a postmortem of now knowing what I know and what we did and you know, then sure, there's a lot of analysis to be, you know, but at the time, I really don't know.
Okay. Was there, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but was there another shop that was in regulated by OTS that did have super senior CDS portfolios? I don't know if GE Capital or any of the other, you know, CIO shops were doing that. But do you know offhand if anybody else was?
CIO only had two other shops, and that was Ameriprise and GE Capital.
Okay. So it's not limited to CIO, just OTS shops.
For OTS shops. I can't say that for OTS because there were a couple of broker-dealers that may or may not have been involved with the super senior CDS. I can say that for CIO shops, the other two, Ameriprise and for GE Capital, they did not have any CDSs.
So as then let's just go forward in 2008 when you become there. So you come in, there Tom O'Rourke has the problem, and eventually the approval comes, and we've seen the March 7th letter, so we know that letter eventually goes out. Just take me through the rest of the year until the blow up in September, or your part of being involved with AIG.
So we had the March 7th letter. We had a meeting with the company to go over. Well, before the March 7th letter, we had a meeting with the company to give them a chance to give us all of the information and to make sure that the information that we had as we understood it was accurate. We decided after that meeting that they didn't have any new information for us that would make us think that things were any different than from what we understood. So we said, okay, we're going forward with the March 7th letter. We sent it to the board. They were given 30 days to come up with an action plan as to how they were going to address all of the concerns that were highlighted in that letter. Because AIG, for their own corporate governance reasons, were not able to come up with an action plan in 30 days. Between the audit committee and everybody else who had to be in that whole chain, we gave them an extension. And then after those 30 days, Tom came to me and said, they're still not done yet, you know. So then we had that internal conversation here. Do we give them another 30-day extension, or do we tell them, no, this is it, you have to have an action plan for us? At the time, we decided that what we would do is to give them another 30-day extension until something could be formally approved by one of the board committees as to what the action plan of how they were going to... I believe it was called the remediation plan, a formally approved remediation plan. So that sort of brought us into the August-September time frame.
Then let me stop you, because I'm not there by my calculation. So if the March 7 letter goes out and gives them 30 days, by April 7 they're not there, they get 30 days to May, they ask for another 30, so now we're at June 7.
Right. I think that, I can't remember, but from, I believe at that point they gave us a draft remediation plan in the June time frame. So then we start focusing on the remediation plan and what they're going to do to address these weaknesses that we've highlighted, that their external auditors have highlighted. All the other targeted reviews that were originally planned for AIG, we put those on the back burner. All of our efforts now are all focused on tracking the remediation plan, tracking the company's progress, tracking all of this through their corporate governance, communications. And what we're really focused here at this point is trying to see some kind of progress. At the same time, we're talking about trying to roll up the 2007 ROE and potentially what we might have as a rating and what might be in the ROE. Tom and I talked a lot about that, about proposed ratings. And in our minds, we thought that it would probably be even more, you know, it would be more severe than the letter, and there would be further downgrade. At which point, what we were then planning was that with that ROE and the downgrade, even a bigger downgrade of the rating, it would then trigger some sort of supervisory, formal or informal, which is decided on a case-by-case basis, of some sort of supervisory response. You know, coming from OTS, you know exactly what I'm talking about there in terms of a supervisory letter or an MOU. That was just all a la carte items that Tom and I, in, you know, also talking with enforcement, well, you know, what do we do, and, you know, how do we position ourselves, and this is what we need to do, and these were all things that we were planning. And it was, that was just all of our efforts at that time.
Okay, so I understand that's going on once the draft report comes in the June 08 time frame. And before you had mentioned something about August, and of course I know September it all blows up, but can you just take me through to the end? I mean, I don't think an exam report is actually issued in 08, is it? And I don't think there's any type of informal or formal enforcement action taken in 08. It sounds like once, you know, the government comes in, as other folks have told us, you know, OTS's role is somewhat diminished. Let's put it that way. And so can you just take me through to, I guess, the September 08 time period, or is that it? You're doing these things,
And that then was September it. Comes along.
That was it. And what happened was that we kept in the July-August time frame, we wanted to come out with either an ROE or another letter. Neither were drafted, by the way. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Tom never sent me a draft ROE. He never sent me. And he never sent me a draft ROE. And so then we felt that because the situation kept changing so rapidly with AIG that we had discussed coming out with another letter. But by August, actually, maybe it might have been formally, I believe, in the July time frame, responsibility for the supervision of this case went to the Northeast region.
Why did that occur? Seems sort of odd timing, given all the craziness that's going on. And as you said, with the situation changing rapidly, to transfer supervision from D.C. to Northeast one, what's the color around that?
That was senior management's decision.
Meeting Mr. Rich, meeting Mr. Lee. Well, Mr. Lee's gone by now, of course. But meeting, where's my little hand?
Mr. Polakoff.
Right. I mean, the way I understand the org chart of the OTS at the time was Mr. Rich, Polakoff below him, and I guess at this point, Alvin's.
Tim Ward.
No, I'm talking Tim Ward. I always read my dates incorrectly.
Yes, Tim Ward. Okay. Tim Ward in July restructured supervision. During the restructure of supervision, the complex and international program was decentralized to the regions.
Understanding it was a senior management decision. And by senior management, do you mean Ward, Polakoff, Rich? Yes.
Well, I guess I don't know who would have to approve that decision.
Okay.
Specifically, it was just decided.
Okay. Did you ever hear any reason about why that was done?
No.
You just informed that it's being done?
That it was being...
I mean, am I wrong? It seems sort of odd to me, you know, that in this time frame with the situation rapidly changing in AIG, all of a sudden the supervision for AIG gets transferred to the Northeast region out of D.C. and is trying to understand why.
When CK left for, became regional director. Mm-hmm. And so then he had the whole, you know, complex and international piece here in Washington. At the time, that was under CK, that was all under Tim Ward. And Tim said that he saw this as an opportunity to restructure supervision, his area, and that we had discussions about he had discussions with me about how he wanted to restructure and basically to just, you know, to get the points of view as to what pieces he wanted. He didn't feel that there was he thought that the pieces could be aligned more efficiently and effectively.
So when you're having those discussions with him, what are your views? What do you tell him?
I made a case for him to keep the complex and international pieces on a consolidated basis and not decentralized to the regions. I sent an email to him probably in the March time frame.
Discussions after the March time frame on the same issues? On the same issue?
We would discuss it during our weekly meetings. Not every week, but on occasion. And he strongly felt that oversight, the regions could provide a stronger oversight of the cases.
Did he feel that oversight was insufficient here, or just that it was better there?
I think he felt that examination resource-wise, regions had more examiners that could be a larger pool of resources to draw from, whereas the complex and international, we had our conglomerate examiners, and that that was one of the main reasons.
What were the feelings of other people, whether it's in the weekly meetings or otherwise, on... I mean, it sounds like you and Ward had different positions, and he's the boss, ultimately he got his way.
Right.
But what are the feelings of other people that you know?
You'd have to ask each of those folks.
Sure, and I will. But if you know, like, for example, you said you didn't know if it had to be approved up the line, but do you know what Polakoff's and Mr. Rich's views on the proposal were, whether they had to approve it or not?
I don't know.
You don't recall things from the Monday meetings with folks saying, I agree with war, I agree with love, or...
It was never discussed during the Monday meetings, the senior staff meetings, this specifically. And I don't know whether there were any conversations between Tim Ward and Scott Polakoff or John Rich or any combination of that.
Okay. So
the only senior management person that I talked about this with was Tim Ward.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. So in addition to this issue of the disbanding of the CIO program and transferring it to the regions, as you said, the situation is changing rapidly with AIG. So I take it until this July-August 2008 time frame and the actual transfer, it's still your baby, so to speak, and others within D.C. to deal with it. So what's... And you've explained to me that you're trying to get the ROE done and you're thinking about another supervisory letter, et cetera. Is that the extent of what's going on with OTSDC regulation of AIG up until the transfer to the Northeast region?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you wanted to issue a report of exam or a letter in July or August of 08, but Mr. O'Rourke never sent you a letter or a draft ROE to look at. How come? Or did you ever ask him, hey, where's the letter, where's the ROE?
No. It wasn't that I wanted it and he didn't give anything to me. When I say I wanted it, we as an agency wanted, and we discussed whether we wanted to send out an ROE or a letter or any of those things. Tom, he can only answer this, but he was already working on having all of those documents ready in draft form to send if and when necessary. We just never arrived at that decision to say, okay, we want to send another letter, okay, we want to send an ROE. That we never got to.
Okay. In the up and once it is transferred from DC to the Northeast region, do you have any more involvement in the regulation of AIG? Is it that clean of a break?
No. I still provided support on the case. But my support was more from the coordination of the communications with the foreign supervisor side than the overall strategy.
Okay.
The core strategy. I was further away from that on the AOG.
Okay, and when you talk about you're talking to the foreign regulators.
I'll get some
of course. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
When you talk about talking to the foreign regulators, somebody else we talked to today, but I forget who. Was talking about how there was a slow...
Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Somebody else we talked... When you said you were dealing with the foreign regulators after the... primarily doing that after the transfer to the Northeast region, other folks have told us, you know, you got a majority of AIG, 80% that's regulated, and you deal with those regulators and foreign part of the world on that, and then the 20% that's not, and that's what you guys get to deal with, and that's FP. So once it's... to the Northeast region, you're not dealing with the FP part of AIG, you're just dealing with the foreign regulators that are actually regulating the other part of AIG. Is that fair or is that accurate? Tell me how it's not.
It is accurate. Let me give you a little bit more information to you know, add a little bit more color. The overall handling in charge of the case, developing the supervisory strategy, implementing the supervisory strategy is all in the region at this point. And so what it is that they would make the decisions, they would drive whether they want to have an exam, the rating, the letter, whatever it is that they would want. I would provide support information and assistance if they, you know, needed some background or just to help discuss the case. I was not really part of that piece as I was, you know, here when it was in D.C. What they wanted me to do, though, was that out of all of that, if there was any communication with foreign supervisors, I would continue to help them do that.
Okay. So who are the people in the Northeast region that are actually, you know, dealing with AIG once the transfer occurs that you're talking to?
That would be Mike Finn, Mike Simone, and Marty Lavelle, and then the region. We just go, you know, down the chain. The assistant director is Marty Lavelle, and then... Joe Keough, the field manager, never really got involved. Marty was more hands-on.
Okay. And again, July, August 2008 time frame, right? So, I mean, given, you know, now happened shortly after that, and given that, as you said, the situation is rapidly changing, I take it them getting in this time frame is resulting in some fairly serious conversations about what's going on with this company. Is that fair?
I guess, yeah.
Okay. And who from D.C. is involved in those conversations besides you, the people we've been talking about, Mr. O'Rourke? And
it would, yeah.
Okay. Did those guys agree with Ward's decision to have the CIO disbanded, if you know, the CIO disbanded and AIG transferred to them?
You would have to talk to the region.
Sure. So, are you having any communications in this time frame with any other government regulators?
July, August?
Really, any time in the time that you've been dealing with AIG on a day-to-day basis.
basis from the March 11 time period.
Yes. At that time, I think we had some conversations with the UK, Singapore, France.
What about other government regulators within the US? You know, whether it's the SEC or the New York Fed or the Federal Reserve or Treasury. Are you talking to any of them? I mean, ultimately, obviously, the New York Fed and Treasury gets involved.
I'm confused here.
Sure.
Communication before or after
any
September?
From before, leading up to the September 08 bailout.
Okay.
Any communications with New York Fed, Treasury, SEC?
Yes, we had one meeting with the New York Fed back in July or August.
Okay, so tell me about that meeting. Where is it? Who's there? What's discussed?
That meeting is with Tom O'Rourke and Jim Kushner. I have to scale back now. Don't remember specifically if Jim was there. I have to go back to my calendar thing. And we met with Kevin and Elise. I think that Tom wrote a meeting summary of this meeting. And we can...
Sure.
I can't remember the last names of these people.
Sure.
And I remember generally they talked about some investment portfolios and this and that and some waterfall analysis. But to be completely honest with you, I received some really bad personal news that day.
I'm sorry.
And so for the most part at that meeting, I had basically tuned out.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I know you said it, but I forget the timing of this meeting. The date, I mean, August 08, July 08, I thought you said, but I'm not
July
sure.
Or August of 08.
Okay. And it's up there?
It's in Jersey City.
Okay. At OTS offices in Jersey City.
Yes.
Okay. And just the notes will tell us, right, who's there and generally what's discussed, I take it. I'm not going to tax your memory if there's a document that'll tell us.
Oh, no. This would be under... No, Tom would have... All of our meetings and discussions with any supervisor, whether it be foreign or domestic or any other government agency, we would write a meeting summary of. And how the discipline was that we'd have a meeting, one of the examination team guys would draft a meeting summary. Then, depending on whether there was a lot discussed or whatever, a draft of this would be sent to everybody who was on the call. We'd read the reading summary and just say, I think we talked about this too, and no, he meant this, and actually it was billions, not million. You know, just to make sure that the call was accurate, or the meeting was accurately captured. And then he would post this to the end drive, the complex, where we housed all the AIG information.
Okay. Well, I mean, understanding that it was not a great day for you and you had tuned out, was it generally for the OTS to update the New York Fed on the financial condition of AIG? Or did they know?
No, this was the first meeting that we'd ever had with the New York Fed that I'm aware of on AIG. And I think that there was just some questions that they had about some securities portfolio and capital. Other than that, I don't really remember.
Okay.
But it was Kevin, Coffey, and Elise, can't remember, was their insurance expert.
Okay. And that's the only meeting that you're involved with the New York Fed?
It's the only meeting that I had been involved with, it, yes.
Okay.
That included the New York Fed. And then, you know, prior to the September, we would just have regularly scheduled calls and stuff with, I mean, regularly scheduled calls with AIG's main foreign supervisors.
Were there regularly scheduled calls with the New York Fed, or with Treasury, or with the SEC?
No.
Were there any calls with the Fed, the SEC, Treasury, or the New York Fed? When I say Fed, I mean all Fed, but since we know what happened, I'm assuming it was the New York Fed that mattered. Leading up to the bailout in September?
No.
I mean, we've heard about the phone call that Mr. Rich received from Mr. Geithner. Are you in the room when that call comes?
No.
Okay. After the bailout, are you involved with AIG at all?
Yes.
Okay, so what's your involvement in that regard?
I got a call. It was either Saturday or Sunday from Tim Ward saying that AIG was in trouble and that we needed to notify AIG's foreign supervisors that OTS was continuing to look at the situation, to monitor the information, and that we would, in our role, try to update all of the foreign supervisors as to what was happening with the company. This was before the New York Fed stepped in to bail out. So then, over that period, I contacted probably... This all of this was summarized in an email that I sent to folks.
Okay.
All of the different countries. I can't remember all of the countries off the top of my head, everybody that we covered. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, essentially, I think we talked to Singapore, Japan, Hong Kong, UK, France, Germany, there's more in there.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially trying to coordinate what we knew, what was happening with what the company was trying to do. And it was a very kind of a rapidly evolving, volatile situation. And what we did was we contacted all of the foreign supervisors, and that there were, you know, until the New York Fed stepped in for the bailout, and then we issued another communication to all of the foreign supervisors, telling them of what was approved by the AIG board and the New York Fed and the agreement that they had. And then after that, we probably, for the next 6 months, received questions from foreign supervisors and connected them with answers from the New York and coordinated, you know, information requests with the New York Fed. Subsequent, and then in November the first week of November, OTS hosted a supervisory college that for AIG. And during the morning session, their chief compliance officer, Suzanne Rich Folsom, talked about the company. And then Sarah Dahlgren from the New York Fed came to talk.
So who was the audience for that presentation?
We have the list we can get you.
But I mean, is it just OTS personnel?
No, I'm sorry.
All the foreign supervisors?
Foreign and domestic supervisors. Okay. This is state insurance folks.
Okay.
I believe New York. I can't remember.
Okay, well,
I know New York was definitely.
Is there anything that I haven't asked you or that you need to tell me that I haven't asked about that you want to tell me?
No, I think you've covered an awful lot.
Yes. Okay, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much. I will tell you what we tell everybody. We'll go back over our notes. We may have some follow-up questions, and if so, I'll contact Chris or Mark, and we'll do that. And the great thing about you guys is you're right across the street. I wish everybody was right across the street. It makes it very easy. So thank you very much for your time, and like I said, we'll get back to you if we have any follow-ups.
Thanks.
Okay, so I've got